Hi, I'm Terry.
And I'm Jay.
And you're listening to Pure Tosh, where we're talking to you about current events you may have heard of, events you may not have heard of, and other random topics of interest.
We're talking pure shit for an hour, but it's quite relevant, and it'll probably make you think, and maybe you might have an opinion, which you could always email in. And if you've got certain topics you do want to talk about, email in, let us know, and we might host it on further podcasts in the future.
Sweet. That should be yours live. Cool. Welcome to episode 7B, 7 again, of Pure Tosh after your boy had some technical difficulties with recording it. Recorded the session last week, went to upload it and edit it, and then there was some drama with the recording app that we were using, and boom, it just disappeared. So completely switched up and gone with the old school GarageBand setup, which is decent for audio editing anyway. I mean, Audacity is used by purists. I prefer GarageBand because I'm a child. And yeah, we're using that, so that should prevent any more drama going forwards. But yeah, how's your week been, Jay?
Yeah, it's been really busy. We've got lucky with the weather. Like I was saying before, so it's been predicting part like a pour down since like Monday, and it just hasn't happened. Like completely blue skies, so got away with it, I guess.
Lucky for some over there.
Yeah, I was hoping Sunday would be a pour down because it'd be like at least then it'd be like dry for like Monday and the rest of the week. But yeah, it is what it is. But yeah, how's your week?
Oh, it's been good. What has been going on this week? So spent half the week in Kilburn. So I was with a partner isolating just because of the whole situation with a flatmate barging into a room at God knows what time. They'd just be like, hey, I've got COVID. And it's like, why aren't you wearing a mask? Why didn't you announce that you're getting tested?
Just breathe all over me, Martin.
Yeah, so freaking stupid. So anyway, so partner moved into a Airbnb, I think, and then just been testing negative daily. On day 4, where it was like kind of the kind of peak time where it would have flagged up, she tested negative and just went and kind of stayed with her to help her through the next few days of isolation. So that's been good. Spent a few days in Kilburn, now we're back in Camden, and today it's just been a really relaxing week. Just loads of interviews for some new roles happening, you know. It's part of that big trend where, so even inside the company, they're saying that loads of corporations are preparing for an entire year of redundancies, like squeezed into 2 months or 2 years of redundancies. It's all the people that were during the entire quarantine period who were looking to move but were staying put, just waiting for things to open up. Now, all those people that were moving, looking to move on, are moving on in such a big way.
I think
we've lost... was it like 15% or 20% of the team, of like the division, in the past couple of weeks? Yeah.
Holy shit, that's a lot.
It's a lot. Yeah. It's a lot of people just in 2 weeks, and then I guess over this entire summer period, it's not over yet. And of course, you know, I'm interviewing, so I'll probably contribute to that. It could be a lot more. So I think there's going to be a lot of movements over the next few months from there.
Yeah, well, I did read actually that they were saying like that, you know, a lot of companies are like, right, that's it, we want you back in the office, and loads of people are like, nah, I'm gonna get another job now.
That
involved being flexible. Like, people have like, it's really weird, like, because like before COVID, people were so determined to do the 2-hour commute in the morning to go to the office, and then the 2-hour commute back. Like, and now people are like, no, I've just proven that I could do the job at home. No way. Like, not doing it. Like,
I think it's a good move forwards, like, for sure, because it's saving the company's money. They don't need to spend on expensive office space.
You'd say that, like, it will save the companies that have been renting money. The people that have actually owned offices, they're going to be shitting themselves.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Like, their market value of their £1 million office has just become like dramatically lower because no one wants it anymore. I think Google and stuff are now doing flexible, so they're allowing for like 3 days off in the week to work at home.
A lot of places doing that. I think
it's a good move. Yeah,
big time.
There's
still
these people in the office, and it's like a lot of stuff. You know, do you need to be around the team? And it's sort of like maybe a few meetings. So it's the case of like coming in on a Monday, having meeting, talk up what needs doing. Everyone then goes home, cracks on, comes back in the Friday, has a meeting, discusses what they've achieved, any problems, blah, blah, blah. Have the weekend to think about it, go back in on a Monday. Yeah, good system. I think it would be a good system. Right.
Yeah, and you got some companies that are giving full autonomy over it. So Deloitte, I'm really happy with them for what they've done. They've literally just said to their employees, I think it was this week, you decide whether you want to come in or whether you don't. You get to set the number of work from home days you want in a week.
Yeah.
Which is incredible. That's such a good sign going forwards. And they're going to see big retention. I think other firms, so the one I'm working at, for now they're saying that, but I don't think they'll say that for long. And then they're just going to watch more and more people go to competitors who are willing to be that flexible. So, yeah, big changes there. I think it's a welcome time as well, because digital nomadism was such a thing. It was such kind of a small cult thing in the past, and I actually think it's going to become a mainstream thing going forwards.
Yeah. But I think, you know, if these offices, you know, clock on, they might be able to, actually work together with other companies, or if like the ones that rent now could work together with other companies, and if they did have like most of their staff at home but only needed 2 days in the office, they could actually share a whole office space.
Yeah.
You know, like hotspotting or hot seating, whatever it is. You know, so maybe like the offices now will be like sort of like joined up with other companies. So like one company has it Monday, Tuesday, or Monday, Friday. Another one has it Tuesday, Thursday, and et cetera.
There you go. I think that's actually a really good business idea.
And then that would like share the rent. So the companies would be paying less rent because they're sharing it. It's a win-win for everyone.
Jay, get yourself down to some venture capitalists and propose the idea, work on it for 7 years, and exit for billions and billions of pounds. That sounds like that. I'm not even kidding. It sounds like an incredible idea. That.
Yeah.
That's a winner of an idea. Because then, you know, you're looking at, all right, but what about all the empty office space? And you're seeing that as lockdown's going up, people are looking for cheap ghost kitchens to prepare foods.
Right.
And there's been a big push in London for, I think, 6 or 7 startups have popped up where they're grocery delivery apps, and they promise you that they'll deliver whatever groceries you want within 10 minutes of you ordering. So in order for that to work, they need to have hidden warehouse spaces in every single pocket of whatever city or whatever, like if it was operating the Isle of Man, they'd have it warehouse space in every single town. So then you've got all of this spare capacity that used to be office space that was owned by, you know, these guys that used to have people come in Monday to Friday. They can now rent out this office space as storage.
Yeah.
There just needs to be an app to connect it. So maybe it's worth adding that to the list of infinite projects that could make a lot of money but just take time to develop.
Yeah. That's mad you say that, actually, because I think about it, right? And you just said their goal is to like get the groceries in 10 minutes. Like, sometimes I just think, you know, like, do really people need to be that sort of impatient fast? I wouldn't mind ordering groceries and it coming the next day. I'd be perfectly happy with that. What's the rush?
I'm not entirely sure, because in a city as busy as London, 10 minutes is just sometimes not really feasible. So now you're seeing a lot of delivery drivers breaking rules, driving the wrong side of the road and everything, just because they are, you know, they potentially lose their job if they can't deliver in 10 minutes and they've got to take shortcuts, making the roads a lot more dangerous, and they're littering like crazy and doing a lot of dodgy stuff. So, you know, there's two sides to it. One of the flatmates was interviewing at one of the places, and he said a big reward system. They've got so much funding, like in the first, like pre-Series A, where you normally net like 100k of funding just to build the MVP. What the firm he's interviewing at netted 20 million compared to 100k just initial funding, and that's before Series A. So it's going to go 20, probably 50, 100, like just keep going up. So he's like, could have entered it, but they would have worked me to the bone, and his payday would have been absolutely staggering.
But I think one thing that COVID's actually sort of taught me is like sometimes you just need to slow down, just take it all in. Like I think like before COVID hit and all this lockdown thing, everyone was just fast paced and just didn't stop. And then when you actually like stop and sort of just like take things in a bit better, I think it's more. Like I said, when everything goes back to normal, everything will be like it will be in the past, hopefully. So you've got topics for today, haven't you?
I've got some topics for today. So one of the topics, just one of the things we're looking at in terms of in a post-COVID world is, so you have been, and you still are, big into video games. For me, I've had to take a step away from video games just because I've got that kind of addictive personality where I can't put it down. And it seems that it's super common during lockdown because gaming disorders, addictions, that kind of thing have tripled amongst the young during the year of the UK lockdowns. You were telling me before that, you know, in January you were having troubles with regulating the number of hours that you're playing on. Was it GTA?
It completely messed up my sleep pattern and stuff. I think what it was with GTA, especially online, is it's a bit weird, but you know, you are in this like world, and you know, when you can't go outside, or you can only go outside to exercise once a day, you're playing this game where you can drive around, you can get on, you can have a plane, you can go on for a boat. Like, half the time I wasn't even doing missions. I was just driving around, like, and just chilling and shooting the odd person. which you just do in that game. But I just spent hours just sort of, like, doing cars up and stuff and just, like, when I think about it now, very unproductive actually, like just spending all that time playing that game. And like, you want to know what inflation is bad? It's bad on GTA. Like, God, talk about inflation rate. Like, some of the new stuff that comes out now is so expensive.
Is it, you know, paid with real money or?
So what it is like you have money on there, you have like a currency on there, and you can obviously do missions and stuff and win money and blah, blah, blah. You can buy millions, but like 64 quid only gets you like 8 million or something like that. Like, and you know, it's like the submarine's been out for ages and that was like 2 million. But then like, I think it was like the other month they brought out this recovery truck, like a hot rod recovery truck thing. It's like 1.5 million. It was like, hang about, like that's way expensive. Like, where bloody hell has COVID affected these prices as well?
That's something we can talk about.
People pay it. Like, when I see people driving around in some of the stuff that comes out, and I think, you bad man, paying that much money on I'm still Yorkshire even when I play the game. I'm like, how much? Like, it's not even real money, and I'm still like, how much? Like, I'll stick to my cheap cars.
In GTA, do you really need the expensive stuff? especially the in-game currency, it's just going to get destroyed anyway, isn't it?
Yeah. And that's the annoying thing as well. Like, if someone will have, like, a really expensive jet and will just kill you about 8 times, and then when you get a Homer missile and absolutely destroy it, you then get charged for destroying their personal vehicle.
Like,
yeah. And then you're fuming then. It's like, hang about, he killed me like 8 times. I was just getting him back. Yeah, crazy. Yeah. World of Tanks I pay good money on, like. Yeah. I think I put like about 40 quid a year into that, like. Yeah. But if I won the lottery, I would 100% buy a tank. Right. I don't care what tank it is, as long as I buy a tank, like. And have like shitty Alaman, just have enough land just to thingy. Like, that's why I'm hoping to win like the Euros, just win like something daft, like 22 million. Like, buy a farm and buy like a Sherman tank or a T-34 tank and just try to just be like driving around in a field in this tank.
Although, you know, I guess you know how on the Isle of Man, how you can get stuck behind tractors whenever you're driving places and you're just waiting for the tractor. Yeah, you get stuck behind a tank and then you're there beeping your horn and the tank's turret gun, it just goes 180 degrees, slowly creaks towards you, just aims the barrel down at the car and you just see them shit themselves.
I'd get myself into loads of trouble. I'd go to town like, and I'd just be like, which way to Berlin? But I had this thought, like, and I was like, it's like, if I bought a tank, if I won the lottery, obviously you're not allowed real, like, real ammo. Or you can, you got to get a special license. But I was thinking of, like, converting it into, like, a giant, like, paintball gun, the actual barrel. Like, it's like putting, like, it's easily done. Like, and you just imagine, like, going around on this farm and, like, someone's trespassing on the land. And I'm just there, like, slam of pain.
Or even even better, you go to like a because they do like paintballing and laser tag and stuff, don't they? Like in the
yeah
in the thing. So everyone else is like kidding out their guns, and you're just like, wait, I left, I brought my own paintball gun. I just left it in the car park. I'll go get it.
Like rolling along,
and then you just drive back in with the tank.
Yeah. Did you ever watch Kelly's Heroes?
No. What's Kelly's Heroes?
It's like a really, really, really old war film, but it's like a funny war film. Like, and it's got like Clint Eastwood in it when he was younger and all that. Like, but it's got this guy called Oddball in it, and he is like the, like, still to this day, I think he's like one of the funniest men like in any film. Just the way he just like, he just be like, just like, he'd be there and the tank's getting fixed. And the sergeant's like, it's like, what are you doing? And it's just like, just eating some cheese, drinking some wine, like, enjoying the view. Just like, where's the tank? Oh, it's broken. It's like, well, why aren't you there helping him fix it? It's like, I don't know. I don't think so. Am I just drunk? Definitely the antisocial type. And then he just like all throughout, he just like does this like random barking, and he's like, rawr, rawr, rawr. That's my other dog sound. But his tank is like all modified, and he's like, he's got big massive speakers on it and stuff like that, and he's like explaining the tank to like Clint Eastwood, and he's like this tank has been modified so it can reverse faster than it can go forward, because we want to know that if we get ourselves into a situation, we can get ourselves out pretty fast. And it's like, this barrel, it scares the enemy. He just like puts like a pipe on the outside of his tank barrel to make it look bigger and stuff. And it's like we like to play music when we're blowing stuff up. And it's just like, he's like there like you know, attacking the Germans, and there's like blaring this music out, like just firing away, like, but it, yeah, it's you got to watch it to understand, like, but he's
appreciate it. That's funny.
Like, and there's this other guy who's like his mechanic. I can't remember his name now. It's a dead weird name. And he always says something like, you know when someone says something and then someone says, oh, but what happens if this happens and stuff like that? And he just goes, oh, what's with the negative waves? You're ruining it. And it's like, it's too early in the morning for them negative waves. And he just goes, it always goes on about these negative waves. But they're like trying to find a bridge. And it's like there's a bridge, you know, from the photos from the reconnaissance. And it's like, yep, there's a bridge. And the guy's like, what if the bridge is not there? And he's like, oh, always with the negative waves. Like, be positive. Think about the bridge. It's a beautiful bridge and it's going to be there. It's a beautiful bridge and it's going to be there. And like when they get to the bridge, as they're like pulling to the bridge, it's still there. But these two German planes come in and blow it up. And he's just there and he's like, see what you've done with them negative waves? And the guy's like, I've had positive waves about that bridge all day. And so he's waving the guy for the negative waves. Like, oh, yeah. It's like an old, old classic, but it's hilarious. Like, yeah. It's hilarious. Like, they rob a bank, like, in Germany. Like, it's all about this rogue crew. They're there first, so they're trying to rob a bank, basically. Like, yeah. So what were we saying? Yeah, so game and addiction. Yeah, we went off course there. Yeah, I'm bad. Like, I haven't actually been on the Xbox in ages. I have moments. I have to, you're doing, just got to sort of stop yourself from playing it, like.
Yeah,
exactly. It does, I can't just simply go on and play for an hour.
No.
I can play, say I go on, I'm just having a bad 10 minutes. I can play for 10 minutes, then go off. If it lasts an hour, I've probably got knee deep into it.
Yeah.
And I'm like ready to go for another 4 hours straight. Like, you know. But I think that's the good thing about World of Tanks, because I can get quite annoyed at losing. In GTA, obviously, it's, you know, it's just a free for all and blah, blah, blah. But in World of Tanks, I can go on a losing streak and just have the worst matches where I'm just outmatched by these tanks that are like two tires higher, and I just get really frustrated, and then I turn it off. So in a way, World of Tanks sometimes helps me stop playing it.
The only thing that can prevent you from that saves you from your gaming addiction is rage quitting, basically.
Yes, exactly. And then I'm pissed off there for a few days. Fucking World of Tanks. Why didn't he put me in them fucking? You do get. I don't know whether or not it's when the server's quiet or not, and I think they just mungle anyone that is online together. But you being a tier 8 tank against a tier 12, and you can fire away, and you're doing nothing. Nothing to the other tank. Or you're doing damage, but it's that tiny, you can see the damage going, you know you've just got no chance of winning. And then it just one shots you and you're down. And you're just like, oh my God. What other games that I used to be addicted to? Sim City, you ever done that?
You see, I never fell for the Sim craze. I know that Sims.
Not Sims. The City Simulator. Not Simulator.
City Simulator, that's something completely different. That's a completely different addiction you're talking about.
Simulator, I don't know. Simulator. Well, Farm Simulator, I can play that for hours as well. I did do that in January, actually. I did play that for hours. And actually, I've got an Xbox One, and for the Xbox, the new Xbox, and it's really annoying because now I want a new Xbox. They have Lord Mower Simulator for it.
Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it.
So imagine, I go out, I cut grass, I come home, I play a game, I cut grass. Yeah. And to be honest, people in the gardening group that I'm in have already started playing it.
No way.
Yeah, they have. Yeah.
Why?
Yeah. Because, I hate to break it, some of these rides, mainly ride-ons, but some of these ride-ons are like 22 grand. I'm never gonna use one of them in real life, apart from at like a trade show or whatever, right? But it's like, yeah, yeah. But the cities, right? So I've got this one, I can't remember what it's called now, without turning on the Xbox and I can't be bothered, where you like create a city and like, I sort of cheat, so I sort of do a scenario so you can go on it. So sometimes you can go on it and, you know, you got to work with the resources and stuff like that, build your city up, build your hospitals. I just have unlimited everything, right? And even when I think I've got perfection, people moan, right? And I was like, I remember playing for it for hours and just going, and people still moan. It's like, I've put a hospital in every area, I've made sure that the prisons are near the nuclear power station, well away from everywhere. I've made sure there's loads of green energy, there's loads of windmills. I've done flood protection. I've put loads of schools and universities in. I've created loads of jobs and all this lot, right? Taxes low. And yet people are still moaning, like, it's just like you can't do it. And I was like, you know what, this actually fucking makes realize like how hard it is to run a country, because you'll just always get people like not happy, like, because that's the great thing about this game, was like when you build the city, it's really funny, it has like tweets of how everything's going, so you just get a tweet, it's like, oh, great day today, I went to the park. And then if someone's annoyed, it's like, ugh, there's no bus route to this area. Or there's got to be a faster way. Oh, I can't get a taxi, blah, blah, blah. And then you sort of go off the tweets to try and work out how to better your city. Like I said, like, even when you try and make this perfect utopia, you just can't. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, that's quite addictive. Like, and it's just a simple game. You're just building roads and putting schools in and, you know, stuff like that. Like,
right.
But it gets very technical and you're just there, like, trying to make it right. Like, and you just can't fucking do it.
Yeah, kind of play into perfectionism, that kind of thing. Well, yeah. The whole thing where video games make you the main character, and I noticed this, like, not playing video games for a while and then going back to an adventure game and how they kind of... praise you as the chosen, or like, this might be more role playing games where you're like the, or even in fighting games and stuff where you're like the chosen character, and then they always like are so complimentary about you doing this job or this quest or whatever. And it's like in real life, you do a job right, you don't get a pat on the back. People aren't like, oh my god, how did you do that?
You don't get the fire sword as a reward.
You don't get the fire sword as a reward. You're like,
Or level 5 armor.
No. You don't get clapped. You're just there like, what? You expect a reward? It's like, you haven't been fired. That's your reward. Yeah. And it's like, but in there, it's like...
Scroll of Vivian.
Yeah. You pretty much pegged the games that I was addicted to. Elder Scrolls Skyrim back in the day. That was an addicting game. Call of Duty back in the day.
Yeah. I used to play this game when I was a kid. It was on PlayStation 2, and it was basically like a space game, but it was like, the problem with it was, if you took 2 weeks out, you forgot most of the stuff that you were doing, like, and then you couldn't work out why you were, so you like hop to different planets, and you'd have to meet different people, and everyone had their own mission and stuff like that. So the game was sort of, I never completed it, to be fair. The game was just so, like, there wasn't, like, a set path. There's just multiples of paths, and you just sort of went on your way. I never completed it. Like, you're just, like, bouncing around and stuff like that. Pretty good game for the size compared to, like, know, when you think about these games now that are like 64 gig and all this stuff, like, I bet if I actually went back and played that game, I'd be like, oh my god, these graphics are horrendous. Like, why did I ever play this game? This is like, it's like ridiculous. Like, but I don't want to ruin it. Like, I did that with Vice City and it ruined me. Like, I went back and played that and realized it broke my childhood because I thought that was such a good game.
Yeah, back in the day.
And it was like, you know, I thought like the cars were really good in the game. I didn't realize how it looked like they'd been like made out of paper. So boxy, not even 3D, like, sort of looking as much, like, ruins it for me, playing games from my childhood and realising how shockingly shit they were when I thought they were, like, the best games in the world. Like,
yeah. I don't think I've done that. What have I... Well, you know...
Don't do it.
Well, they've been making all these remakes of those games, haven't they? They made, like, remake Crash Bandicoot. Do you remember that game on the PS1?
Yeah.
So they've remade Crash Bandicoot. Yeah. They remade Final Fantasy now. Turned that into a HD thing.
Rayman as well. I got
really?
That.
Done that?
Yeah, they remade Rayman, yeah.
Ratchet and Clank on the PS2. That used to be a thing.
Yeah.
So they're going back and doing Commando, it all over.
Command or Conquer 3. Red Alert used to be my favorite game on the PlayStation 1.
Right.
And I used to play hours on that. And I played it about 4 years ago. One of my mates had it and I jumped on it and I played it. And oh my God, I soon realized how bad that game was. And I remember why I played on it for so long. And it was because when you built up your army so big, the game would slow down that much. It would take 2 hours to get to the other side of the enemy side and destroy them. Like, it was ridiculous. It used to be like, that game was shocking, but still, like, what, like, from my, like, memory of it as a child, I was like, oh my god, that played. Amazing game. I did buy like a new Command & Conquer, like a modern day one. Not as good. Like, I mean, obviously it's more tactical, more realistic, but it just didn't have that same appeal that the old game had. Like, what other games? And then Pokemon as well.
Pokemon.
Yeah.
Pokemon's still going. Yeah. Pokemon's
still
big thing.
The original games, right? And I didn't realise that there was actually a battery in the cartridges.
Really?
Like, yeah, did you know that?
No,
yeah.
I did not know that.
I'd be like jumping on it every occasion, putting it in, and like reminiscing of all the old things.
Yeah.
The battery's dead now. So when you put it in, all your Pokemon are gone. They're gone. Your whole life is gone.
Like, no. This is still a bit off topic, but going on that. So, again, it's super sad of me, but one thing that I've been seeing on YouTube, I actually tried it a bit. So there's a thing going around there, because Pokemon's a little thing. You know, people are now trading Pokemon cards because you can hold on to them. I think one friend of mine, he bought like just a grand worth of Pokemon card packs, and then just by opening the Pokemon card packs and putting them into sleeves, he turned 1K into 4K in like a few weeks. But going back to the games, so you know how the Pokemon games, remember how easy it was? Because I guess it's designed for like 5-year-olds. Like you could just kind of walk through the game and it was like a nice adventure. So there's now a new thing called, have you heard of Nuzlocke rules?
No.
In Pokemon. So it's like a load of self-imposed rules to make Pokemon hard. So things like you have like a level cap where you can't be higher than the next gym leader's Pokemon. You can only catch the first Pokemon from each area, and when a Pokemon faints, it dies forever. You've got to release it. And it makes it much, much harder. Oh, and things like you can't use items, and you can't heal in battle or whatever. So it turns Pokemon to a really like strategically hard game. And then you can go back and play the old Pokemon games you have, and it's like, it's really interesting. And people have done kind of YouTube kind of videos about it, and it's actually really good to watch because it's to the point where it adds such a challenge to it, and you get attached to kind of the ones that you like, and they just get one-shotted by accident, and then you just watch them have a meltdown on video. Bit sad, but.
That's very interesting actually, because I went back on my games and played one. Actually, this was thinking about now. This was talk about 6 years ago. I went back on, and you know how you get given a Pokemon, like at the start. I went on, and basically I played it. So I get given a Pokemon, but then the first other Pokemon that I caught would be my main one, and then I'd put the other one in the computer, the one that I'd been given by Professor Oak, and then just played with the other one. And I actually didn't realize, because when you actually go through, you probably don't realize it, but you're always using the one that Professor Oak gave, and that always leveled up faster. And you thought, oh, brilliant. But actually, it's whatever Pokemon you're using first anyway, leveled up faster at the start. So I would get, I think it was a Rattata or something that I got. And I played that, and after like two gym thing, I actually realized that's a really good Pokemon. And I flew through it without having to use the Professor Oak one. I think that actually the Professor Oak Pokemon was holding me back. I used to try so hard to try and get that to evolve. I was just like sort of rejecting all the other Pokemon. But it also made me like when I was like, it's pretty sad now. When I had all my six Pokemon, I'd always try and so I'd get one up to like level 15, and I'd be like, right, all the other ones have got to go to level 15 before I move on. So then I'd get them all up to that. And yeah, I'm pretty much sort of making it harder for myself, but it just made it more interesting. And then it actually made it better when I was actually then coming to sort of the end of it and going up the thing to become a master and all this lot. Because I had like these Pokemon that I normally probably wouldn't have trained up that much. And instead of having like one really powerful Pokemon and a load of semi-powerful ones, I end up with like full six of very powerful Pokemon. But that is addictive. That is very time-consuming. I'm just sort of that hours and hours of hours of my childhood was spent playing that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I had I started playing Gen 3 ones, so the Ruby, Sapphire, Emerald. So that was the only generation I got stuck on, because that was around for me. It was like year 6 or something, or year 6, year 7, and I sank hours into it. I think I spoiled my eyesight on it so badly, because I'd play it so much I'd be burning my retinas and kind of have my eyes go red. I used to have 20/20 vision, and I think Pokemon single-handedly took that away from me. Well, not
That
Pokemon.
probably didn't need well. I had the Sapphire SP flip, the flip one.
Yeah, that's the one
I
I
had
had.
that.
That's the one I had as well. I had Ruby XP.
But I also had like the Game Boy Advance, and I had the original Game Boy. I had the Game Boy Color. Pretty mental to be fair. I think I still got like Tetris and stuff like that on them cartridges. And Pac-Man.
Pac-Man.
Not Pac-Man. Oh, there was this pink one. It used to be like
Kirby or something.
Kirby.
Yeah. I know Kirby from Smash Brothers. That's it. Never played the original Kirby games.
Actually, that's funny. If Beth hasn't like hid it away in storage, I think I've got under the bed. I think I've still got all my games. But I don't actually play it for ages. But it is. Let's have a look. Yeah, I've still got like the original like Game Boy case thing, which is like mad. Yeah, here it is. Game Boy
There it
Advance.
is.
Super Mario Land 2 and the and 6 golden coins. I got Dr. Mario. Look at that.
My God.
I got Dr. Frankenstein on Game Boy. Oh my God. Donkey Kong. I got Donkey Kong. No. I completely forgot about this. This is actually quite good that you mentioned it. Pit Fighter. Here's my... There we go.
Which one's that? I see. So you've got you got the Pokemon themed.
That's what I said. Advance, yeah.
Right. I thought you meant because you had the game in it, but no, you got the Pokemon themed one.
Yeah. I don't know where my thing went, but looking, I got Double Dragon. This one was a good game, but it's called Quince, and you used to go like round, and you used to have to take areas, and there was a thing that was trying to get you. Like right. Electric shock thing. I've got Pokemon Blue. I've got Pokemon Red, Yellow. I've got Crystal.
Right.
I've
nice.
Got Gold. I have got Kirby. Yeah, Kirby.
There it is.
I've got.
Just watching Jago relive his entire childhood.
I know. I have got Tiny Toons. Babs Big Break on Game Boy. Look at that.
Wow.
I wonder how much these are worth. And I've got the original Super Mario as well. Right. More Pokemon. Now this is a good one. This will hit a lot of people. I've got Yoda Stories, Star Wars.
No. Let's see how much one of those things are worth. So, look, Yoda's Stories, Star Wars.
I don't even want to know, mate. It's still... I had this in the case. It still looks like brand new.
No. Like, no way. Okay, so if you were to put that on, so someone's selling it for £17.
Right.
Or CD-ROM. Okay, so it's not saying the Game Boy one. Here we go, yep. So, Yoda Stories Game Boy Advance, £14.
This isn't Game Boy Advance, this is Game Boy.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, this is the original Game Boy one.
Right, no, sorry, my mistake. Yeah, it is that. So one person's got it for £17, one person's got it for £14. So yeah, it's actually worth it.
You know what? I'll hold on for it for another 10 years and then
see what happens.
And then see it. And then I've got Game Boy Gallery as well, that was pretty good. Right. Yeah, I don't know where my Game Boy Color is, though. Here's one that would be... Yeah, so there's my Kirby one. Right. But I've also got... You remember... You know how it's like WWE?
Yeah.
I've got WF. Superstars. With Hulk Hogan on it. Look at that.
God. My God.
I can't believe that. That is like... But I think some of my games have magically gone missing. I don't know why. But it seems that my... my SP games, my Game Boy Advance games have all gone. All of them. They've all disappeared. I've just got empty cases. I don't know what's going on there, and I can't remember. Like,
right.
But they've all gone missing. But I used to have Ruby and all of that lot.
Wonder what's happened.
That's very annoying. I wonder what happened there. Yeah. Because my Game Boy is actually... Yeah, they've actually gone missing. And my Game Boy Color's gone missing. That's a bit annoying. Yeah, because I had loads more and I never sold them or anything. But I don't know what's going on there. I don't know what's going on. I think maybe when I lived at home, because I never actually went through this. I sort of moved out and never really looked at it. I think maybe my little brother might have took him, my Game Boy Advance games, because he had a Game Boy Advance. So right. I think that there's been a little bit of thievery going on. I had noticed. And I still never noticed. But crikey. Yeah. Unbelievable. But at least I've got the original games. The original Game Boy games.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm happy with that. I'm glad none of them got taken. But so we've dragged on a bit on that one. What else were we going to talk about today?
So other than that, so I remember you mentioning that COVID's taken a turn for the worse in India, hasn't it? With a bit of a development there.
It actually like panicked me, because I was like, holy shit, I was like, is this like going to be like another year of COVID? But actually looking into it, the living conditions there, I think we here shouldn't have anything to worry about. I think a lot of factors have all been like in play here, and I think COVID's just sort of connected them all up and allowed it to get bad, if you know what I mean. Because COVID is, with the whole immune thing, and they were using a drug as well to cope with it. But like I said, but it's horrible though. Like, they're getting their eyes removed and stuff, and like they keep checking them every 24 hours, and it's like growing back. Our normal immune system would fight this, but obviously with the immune system being down, it's not. Scary, because it's when it gets to the brain, it kills you. Just like, Jesus.
Even before that, you're having parts of your body just cut out, aren't you? Which is just
even if
vicious.
You survive, you've got like one less eye or whatever. So,
part of your face cut off. It's things like those that kind of make it. Make me grateful, you know, despite all of the challenges and flaws that our government and civil service system has, we've not descended into stages of desperation like that. Like, we've adhered to lockdown, everyone's been generally across the board excellent with it. We don't have to deal with, you know, fungi like that or any other kind of illness that, unlike COVID, which is like a 1 in 1,000 mortality rate. That's not the most up-to-date statistic, but that fungus just seems, you know, can you imagine having to deal up with that over here, that being the norm?
Oh, it'd be lethal. I think I'd actually just shut myself off from the rest of the world and just live out in the woods and the wildlife.
Isn't that where the fungus would be though?
No. It's common in cow manure.
I see.
Right. And I think where else? When you think about it, I think some of the conditions in India are perfect for the fungi. But I don't think that it'd have a chance here. They're very cramped, they're overpopulated. Fungi spore, so you know, it's very easy in a close area, especially if you've got a cow living next door to you or whatever, or in the street, it's very close to get the chances of it happening there. It's very high compared to here, so. But it is scary, it is, because, but you never hear anything about China anymore about it. Like, have you noticed that?
Yeah, well, I think in terms of how they've shut down and controlled it, they've been doing pretty well, haven't they?
Yeah. We haven't heard like any other like variant or stuff like that. Well, I mean, you don't know with the government there, do you, if they would hide it or not, like.
That's a thing, you know. There's only so much information that gets let out.
Yeah. Well, you've got you have got hackers that are always hacking Beijing.
Are you talking about hackers outside of China that are hacking, that's hacking data within China, or the other way around?
So when COVID was being sort of mashed up, I think it was Vietnam had been hacking Beijing, and then I think a Canadian group had been hacking Vietnam, and then a US group hacked the Canadian hacking group. It's like a chain reaction to find out what was going on. But that's why Vietnam at the start went into a lockdown straight away and were very quick on doing stuff because they had more information about it than anyone else for a good while. And obviously, they're not going to tell America because they're still not happy with America. Like, so, yeah. When you think about it, Vietnam, you know, you'd think they'd be one of the worst affected because they are actually quite a poor sort of country and stuff. But they'd clocked on to what was going on, the seriousness of it, and was straight away, boom, like, and that's why Vietnam's kept it down really well, like really well.
Yeah, we're lucky to not have that over here, aren't we? Big time.
But what's annoying me now is all the you know, we're meant to be getting our freedom soon, and it sort of just keeps getting delayed. And it's like, come on. It's like we've got the vaccine now, like let's open it up, like,
Agreed,
and
agreed. We're getting close. So the UK's down to over 18s getting the vaccine. So we're nearly there. Like I mean, even only like last week or something, it was only open to over 21s. So we're speeding ahead big time. So soon everyone should be ready, and then once everyone's got vaccinated, then it's just a matter of time. But anyway, so we're coming up to the hour, believe it or not. It's flown past. Same as always.
Well, it can be a little bit longer, seeing as we've like missed one, like so.
Absolutely, absolutely. Then let me pause it and extend the timer. Give me 2 seconds. Yep, there we go. So that should be back on. And that's actually good, because there was one thing that I did want to bring up, and that was linked to what you were telling me before, that you've signed up to a online trading app, eToro, right?
Haven't done anything yet because I'm still a bit poor. My money's still tight for a couple of months, but I've got it. I've just sort of like just keep having a look and watching YouTube videos and stuff like that, and just trying to get so like as most advice as possible before I plunge in and do anything stupid.
I think that makes the most sense. And what we were also looking at before is kind of, we're talking about the percentage of people in different countries who invest. So you were saying that, you know, and there is an absolutely huge culture for it in China. So from what I hear, people back in the motherland, you know, even if you own like a grocery store or like a, you know, convenience store or like a corner shop, the owners and the employees are all invested. Like the amount of capital that's flowing, 80% of the population, over 1 billion people investing is pretty much all they can. You know, the size of the market over there is absolutely staggering. Compare that to the US economy, which peaked at like around 65%, so nearly two in three people in 2007. But since the global the global recession has declined at 55% or low 50s. And it's been like that since around 2010. You know, it's not really recovered. So just barely over half the people in like a what is considered a highly capitalist country invest. In the UK, so I read a statistic that only 3% of people have stocks and ISAs, but it turns out that actually it's a high number of people that invest in the UK. We're still a lot lower than you'd expect. Only 33% of Brits own shares.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One in three.
And I think, like I said, I was watching a documentary, and it really showed the power of having people buy shares. Because this documentary was all about how these Chinese companies are buying American companies up.
Yeah.
And it's like, how are they getting this money? And yeah, they're getting it through like government as well. Government's propping it up. But government may, so when they were buying like a pork thing, I can't remember the figures, but let's say the Chinese government gave them so many millions, but then everyone else that's got dabbles in shares then puts a little bit in, and then they were getting all of a sudden, you know, 22 million, like just by, like, well, just the general public, really, in China, when you think about it. And you know, there's that many people there, you know, these companies can gain money very, very quickly, and like I said, that they're buying these companies up, like, and the Americans, like, you have these Americans that are like, oh, they shouldn't be doing it, but the whole American greed, they're like so keen on selling it, like, it's just like, you know.
Well, I mean, the American system's a capitalist economy, and capitalism's based on owning capital, so I don't think the Americans can cry foul of it. It's, you know, at the end of the day, they've got less people, they've got a smaller market. I mean, the amount invested per capita in the US, I'm sure, is much higher, but, you know, that won't be the case forever. And it's not just China that's coming online. Right now, if you are a quantitative investor in the UK or the US, you know, you're looking, it's a really tough time, you know, big demand, but you're looking at what, 15, 20% per year. But if you're a quantitative investor in India, like, Indian stocks are doing crazily good, and because they're on that, there isn't that much investment talent over there, you can make big money doing that. So now there are going to be more and more people in tech focused India coming online and, you know, investing big money increasingly. So it's going to be India and China doing that. And if anything, it's, the question is, why aren't more people in the US investing? Or why aren't, you know, more people in the UK investing? So only a quarter of generations Y and Z, so millennials and Gen Z, are invested.
Yeah.
Three quarters say they'll invest after the pandemic or start investing after the pandemic. You know, why aren't there more people investing? It's definitely a difference. And I think in as well,
there's a lot of like I said, in China, it's the normal. Everyone's doing it. It's sort of a win and lose situation. But I think, you know, with the downloading of the eToro, what I've learned is like 75% of people are losing money, and there's like quite a lot of negative information out there when you just type it in.
Yeah.
And what I found was actually the biggest one is these, what are they called? Accumulator or something, I don't know what they are, where they multiply your stock. So if you want to buy the stock and you haven't got the money, it sort of, you put like a 200 in, but it will like make it look like $2,000.
Oh, you're buying on leverage, buying on margin.
Multiplier, yeah.
You're buying on margin, yeah. So that, that's a scary thing, because that's happening in the crypto markets, and that's why a lot of people are predicting there's going to be a bigger crypto crash around the horizon, because people are borrowing all this money on margin, and so, you know, you've put forward 10k into whatever crypto, but you've done it at 100x leverage, so your 10k investment is like £1 million investment, which works great unless it goes down to zero below, you know, if you don't calculate it correctly, you can bomb your account so easily. So a lot of markets right now are being pumped up by leveraged cash. And you saw on eToro, how easy is it to like kind of trade on margin? You can just change the multiplier when you want, can't you?
I don't know. I'm probably dabbled, like, but what I've read is, you know, that's the biggest negative is apparently loads of people have like got into like huge debt in trying to fix. But there is some good videos out there, and they just basically say, don't do it. Don't do it.
Yeah.
Like, if you haven't the money, just don't do it. And I think, that sort of positive side to it just gets hidden away because there's so much negativity with, you know, these people getting into debt and like people committing suicide and all this lot. Like, when you type it in, it's like, you know, it's really off-putting when you want to actually like sort of get into it, just reading all the negative stuff, and there isn't actually enough positive stuff. And, you know, I think Wolf of Wall Street, when that came out, brilliant movie, but it sort of highlighted some of the problems in it. And I think it sort of put Wall Street in a negative way. I think that probably off-putted a lot of people from wanting to dabble in it. But I think, you know, if more people invested, even if it's just like with, you know, with penny stocks and with their loose, you know, with basically people need to sort of save up, get like money that they don't mind losing, right? Say they go off coffee for a month and decide, I'm not buying coffee for a month. If they then use that money, and that basically was money to go on a coffee, so they got no worries about it going, if they lose it, they lose it. If they put that into stock, I'd be like, people did that. You know, the economy would do a lot better as well. Like, yeah.
Yeah, because if invests well, it can act as a multiplier effect.
Because I think that's why, you know, when you look at China and they're doing so well, is because they're just doing certain stuff right. And I think we're missing a trick here. Like, can you imagine if everyone in England was dabbling on stocks and shares, and you got new UK companies needing capital, and it's more easier for them to get, and then obviously it's more easier for them to grow, and then obviously then they provide more jobs, and sort of rolls on then, doesn't it? And, you know, and that's what I think we've seen in China. You know, there's a lot of money being pumped into companies, and these companies are then buying American companies out. These American companies are making profit and making money and bringing it back, but also they're getting in on the technology as well. Like, when you think China owns 60% of the meat production in America. But when you look into it, their factories and their like slaughterhouses, the technology wasn't really there, but now they're getting all this technology from these big companies in America that they've bought out. So, you know, they're basically jumping ahead and learning on advanced stuff. Like,
oh, absolutely. I heard news the other week that, you know, for ages the US held like the biggest language model in machine learning, deep learning for like interpreting language. But China's just come out of nowhere. You know, it was a race between Google and a previously not-for-profit called OpenAI. But recently, China have come completely from left field. I'm just taking the technology and then just thrown gigantic amounts of cash at it. And no, it's no surprise they're able to throw more money than a single private entity like Google or OpenAI into it. And they've just you know, built something huge. So the fact that China's now contending with the big, you know, the big players in that as well, it's just a signal. It's a very interesting signal right there.
They're putting more money into, the government's putting more money into tech at the moment than they did with their nuclear bomb program. Like, I think it's like $1.7 trillion they're putting in.
Wow.
Which is incredible. Like, also, you know their high-speed train systems? You know what they call it? You know how England's getting that? Is it 2, whatever it is. Bullet train. What is it? What's it called?
Oh yeah, it's something like that, isn't it? I know what you mean. It's to
connect the north to like London, basically. Yeah, and it's might be easier. Well, China is actually like, basically they've perfected it. They've got it in it. Like they've basically connected every single region to Beijing, and they spent billions doing this. And there was a guy on YouTube that was explaining how the Chinese government class sort of thing. So how we would see it is that they've spent that much money, they'll never get that money back from doing this train thing. And you know, we would see it as a complete loss. Like, we've lost millions doing this, blah, blah, blah. They'll never get it back, even with ticket prices, unless they start charging this much money. But how the government see it is, like, the average area in some of them regions, the average wage is quite low, or actually ridiculously low to what it is in, like, Beijing or some of these economic zones that they've got, that they've connected these rural areas into. Right. So this guy on YouTube, I can't remember his name now, worked it out. Basically, the average income in these regions that were rural China have gone up because these people are now commuting. And it only takes them like an hour or so to commute on these super fast trains to these areas. And then obviously they're getting a higher wage and then coming back. So the money distribution has sort of distributed more fairly. So, but when you work it out, and if you class the rise in the area of average wage, he called it social profit, because you know people are doing better, essentially, than becoming richer. When you work out the jump in that, they're actually in profit compared to what they paid, in theory. Like, very, yeah. Like, it's a bit confusing, and me trying to explain it, I've probably explained it completely wrong. But like, what they're doing is sort of right, if you know what I mean. When you look at England and you look at Wales, there's certain villages in Wales that have like a very high unemployment rate, and even when people are earning money, they're not earning a lot of money, and there's no jobs, and the can't really get a job because everywhere's too far away. And it's like, if we connected them to Cardiff or something like that by a high-speed train, then they could go to work in an hour, because it'd be like a super fast train, earn that higher wage, and then come back and live in their village. And then obviously then it would increase the village's sort of the money in the village, if you know what I mean. Like, probably explained that all wrong, and people probably listen to this thinking, what the fuck is he on about? Like, but like, in my mind it makes sense, but trying to get it out doesn't make sense. Like, as I'm trying to explain it, you're like, I think you're looking at me confused. Like,
a little bit, but
yeah, it's really hard to explain, but I know the way this guy explained it to me, it does. In my mind, it makes sense. Like, so improving an area, like, and making, I can't fucking do it, mate. I can't get it out of my brain. I just can't get it out of my brain. How much would you say London generates?
What, in terms of gross domestic product?
I'd say, like, circling of money, like, you know, how much to, like, sort of, like, pay out in, like, wages or, yeah.
So, it said that in 2019, London had a gross domestic product of over 500 billion British pounds.
That year?
Yeah, in a year.
Wow. Yeah, and then how much is it, like, in, like, Yorkshire or whatever?
Okay, GDP of Yorkshire. Gross domestic product of 24,700 euros per inhabitant. So hold on one sec, let me just calculate this. 24,700 euros in pounds. And then what's the population of Yorkshire? Population of Yorkshire is 5.3 million people. 3 times 21,000. That's a big number, but hold on. 3. So GDP of Yorkshire is 111
billion. 111
billion.
Yeah. So imagine
100. So yeah, 111 billion.
So yeah, this probably that's obviously quite a lot. But so imagine that train boosted Yorkshire up and made it like 200 billion, or let's say pumped it up to 300 billion. And then you worked out the difference of what it was to what it is now, of how much money is coming in, and how China sees it is that is the profit of building the train. Do you get me?
Well, they
spent so many billions on the train, and then and that's why it's classed as, how this YouTuber described it, as social profit instead of actually money profit, if you know what I mean, even though it is still to do with money.
Yeah, it's kind of looking at the bigger picture. So kind of if everyone is able to produce more, then the government's able in the long term to take more in taxes. So it just makes a lot of sense. And even if they build like a train in a country that they can't collect taxes in, then they can win goodwill or political capital, which is what they're doing in Africa by building large railway systems and infrastructure. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, like the simple answer is China's thinking about the long game, you know?
Yeah.
It, like,
they're thinking about the people and you know, they are like the biggest country to take people out of poverty. I mean, they were in poverty for a long time, but now you're seeing quite a lot of middle class people now. Yeah, they've got quite large, very large middle class community. Whereas I think our one is sort of shrinking a bit and or just becoming devalued.
Yeah, I guess globally, you know, we're less kind of, because the pound's just worth less. And then UK salaries, once you're adjusting for the new kind of value of the pound in the global markets, we're not earning that much, you know. So that's one thing I've been looking at, is if you're looking remotely at earning a salary in either Switzerland or the US, but you're living in the UK, that salary can go a long way. And China, so they're watching their currency rise, and it's either Beijing or Shanghai that has the highest concentration of billionaires now. It used to be like, I think US or something, or Monaco or whatever, but now it's Beijing or Shanghai.
So
you're seeing a vast growth in like the Chinese wealthy. A lot of income disparity as well, to be fair, but
now on topic here, like this is what I watched the other day actually. So the Chinese as well are shaming. So they used to
be like
show off well.
Exactly.
Now they're shaming people that do it.
Yep, 100%.
So like the guy from my Alibaba used to be like big and used to do all these like things, and he's gone quiet. And quite a few other billionaires are like not showing off as much as what they used to.
I
mean, they were just showing examples of billionaires that did show off and now aren't showing off at all. They're not having big parties. They're not throwing around luxury jewelry. They're not making big sort of entrances. They're sort of, you know,
interesting. Well, that's coming about because while the rich are getting richer in China, there's a lot of people living on the poverty line. There's just now a lot of tensions around, you know, income disparity. So you're seeing kind of CEOs in the UK being paid 100x multiples or whatever to people who just started or interns or whatever. The difference in China is vastly wider, right? The poorest in China are struggling to put like the most basic of food on the table. Much the same way as in the UK, but then the richest in China have levels of wealth that the UK just can't comprehend or compete with.
But they are, like I said, they are trying very, 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 very hard to think it, like, but there's a weird thing as well in China about, like, if you, having free homes. Like, have you heard about that one?
Having free homes?
Yeah, having free homes. Apparently, like, for males, if you want a very beautiful woman, like, one of the best ways of getting a very beautiful woman to marry her is to have free homes. Like,
oh, but this, so, yeah, this is a culture where, you know, the kind of adherence to cash and to money is just very different to the UK. So it's like common when you're walking down the streets of Shanghai to see, you know, wives crying in the street and jumping up and down and crying in hysteria because their husbands, they want the husbands to buy them a £2,000 bag or whatever. The husband's like, I don't want it. And then it's just completely normal for them to just be jumping up and down and crying because they just want and feel like they deserve this kind of thing. I mean, so for my cousin, for example, you know, there's the increase in like kind of gender equality and everything. But my cousin's kind of career objective was to marry wealthy. And it's not even seen as a bad thing. That's still a done thing. And I think she did super well. Well, from what I hear, she did super well in that routine. So I'm going to hit up my cousin-in-law at some point for that and just be that mooching Westerner. But no, I mean,
I had that idea of marrying rich, but didn't really get there. Marrying wealthy didn't work out for me.
I don't know. I mean, you know, it's not like you did all right. Yeah. You did all right.
I did all right. I did all right.
You did all right.
I would have loved to have married a woman that was worth millions. Like, who'd like someone like you who just divorced Bezos or someone like that. Like.
Oh yeah, no. Yeah, no. I've got. I even have friends like that. That was just like, can I just marry you? Two prong thing. One, your dad's cash. Two, no, I'm kidding. I'd never do that. Whereas, like, you know, I think the biggest one for me. So I would 100% marry for a passport. I don't know about the whole cash thing. You know, I think that's a. I don't know.
Marry for a passport.
Yes, like, absolutely. A US passport would do that in a heartbeat. Why? Because, like, have you seen the difference in, like, kind of salaries and, like, expectation and, like, kind of how you can grow businesses so much quicker in the US? It's like a US passport is worth its weight in gold.
You've also, like, you could get ill in the US and be massively, massively in debt. Like,
well, normal. So health insurance isn't actually, like, I actually did, like, a look around at it because I was like, how much is health insurance per person in the US to get like a good level, not like top, but like good level of health insurance? How much is it per person? Like, how much would we be paying? $2,000 per person.
I don't know.
$2,000 per person. Right. So obviously it's like, this is something that, you know, if you've got like, if you're on a salary job, $2,000 coming out of that is all right. But if you got like, if you know, you got your family, you got three kids, then $10,000 per year suddenly becomes like a fortune. And that I get, but it's like as a single person myself without any dependents, $2,000 per year, I'm like, that's not going to bankrupt me.
Yeah, I mean, you could say that. You just hear so many horror stories, don't you?
I think it's that whole thing though, you know, when you're struggling to put food on the table and then you got to make the choice between food or can I just dodge paying $10,000 this year on medical fees. And then you just get hit the 1 year with whatever illness in your 50s while you're still trying to dodge those kind of insurance fees. So it's that. It's like, it is affordable, in it, but you then got to, like, watch your disposable decrease drastically. So, I don't know.
Yeah. Because there's this guy that I watch on YouTube that eats MREs, which is military rations. But he eats them from, like, World War II.
Wow. Why is it just like a money saving thing, or what is he just a masochist?
He owns, I think he has a museum in America, and his channel he obviously makes millions from his channel.
Yeah.
Like loads of people watched him. Steve MRE, like it's really weird. You've got to watch one of his videos. They're addictive to watch because he opens it all up, and it's just like fascinating to see what you're going to get and stuff like that. Like, and then he's like, "Let's put this out onto a tray." Nice. And then he's like opening up a tin that's like 50 years old. And he's like, "Oh, nice this." He's like opening it up. He's like, "Yeah, that's still good. I think that's still good." Then he eats a little bit, like, but like some of the, like, especially the older ones, he gets like, it's like, "Oh my god!" And it's like original Camel cigarettes or Lucky Strike cigarette.
Okay, that's cool.
And he'll smoke it as well. He'll literally have a smoke on these 1947 cigarettes, like, and like this, but he describes everything.
Wow.
Like, he's very good at describing the flavors and stuff like that.
Wow.
Some stuff he opens up and it's absolutely rotten. But yeah, right, get this, right. You end up in hospital from having a 2016 Ukrainian MRE. Right. Out of all the stuff things, he eaten,
yeah,
a 2016 MRE got him. Like, yeah. And it, yeah. Cost him like, I think it cost him like 26 grand when he was in hospital. Like,
Jesus.
Yeah.
Jesus. 26 grand.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just makes you grateful that, like, you know, the recent challenges in my family with the whole, well, that illness, God, that would have cost so much. So much in the US. So I don't even know if, like, the base, you know, that, like, 2K health insurance would cover it, but.
Yeah, but that's another thing as well, like, because, like, you know James and stuff, and he's got Crohn's, and, you know, it makes you wonder, if he went to live in America, would he be able to still get health insurance with knowing that he's got being diagnosed with that problem? You know what I mean? Like, if you're already diabetic, wouldn't the health insurance be more because of the risk?
Yeah, it would.
It's like if someone had a couple of crashes in a car, your insurance is higher. That's just how, like, the private sector works.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, for you, it might be 2K, but for some people, like, even insurance could be out of reach because they're, like, all I said, diabetic things,
yeah,
or got underlying health issues while that being, like, you know, brought up, like heart murmur or something like that. Like, yeah. Or something could have happened to them when they were a kid and they could have had a punctured lung or something like that. You know, it could have all add to factors of them not being able to afford it. Like, you know, which is scary. Like,
absolutely.
Very scary.
Absolutely. All right.
Yeah.
I think it's, we've hit the 90-minute, we've hit the 90-minute mark now. So I'm going to be like,
well, you know what, seeing as we lost half of it, right, I think it's quite good that we've got this extra one. So it's like a double whammy of making up for last week and this week of, like I said, pure tosh, straight at you. Like, just, like I said, I think we covered a lot of stuff, actually, thinking about it. We did run a lot.
We did. We covered, what we cover? So, you know,
Gaming addiction. The fact that I've lost a load of games.
Well, you've got a treasure trove waiting there. You know, I think you've rediscovered your childhood. I bet also try a Pokemon Nuzlocke. You know, you found your Pokemon games. Look it up. I mean, if you're willing to, if you have time to burn, or if there's another lockdown on the island, then give a Nuzlocke a go.
The problem is, them games are just so old now. Like I said, the batteries have gone in them.
Yeah.
So even if you save, as soon as you turn it off, turn it back on, it's back to a new game.
Like, that's rubbish.
Can't save the game anymore.
That's rubbish.
Like,
yeah. Okay.
Such a sad time.
These
so
word.
Sad.
But
makes
yeah.
you wonder how old you're getting. Like,
when your Game Boy's
when you in the fucking
when your Game Boy's gone, go, like, I guess. That's it, signs. Anyway, thanks everyone for listening, and don't forget to give us a like on the Pure Tosh Insta, shoot an email in to puretosh.podcast@gmail.com, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Brilliant. See you later.